Got a press release about this item last week or the week before, and I have been absolutely dying to speak to my next guest. Eugenia Sapria, good morning and welcome to Northside Today.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
You're more than welcome. Now, you are, I am delighted to say, up in DCU, Dublin City University, and you have recently carried out a study in relation to mainstream media. Now, we hear a lot about mainstream media, and I presume it has become even more prominent since maybe Donald Trump's attack on mainstream media. But your study into mainstream media, Eugenia, what did you discover? And yours was in particularly in relation to what went on in Greece.
Yes, that is correct. In fact, we did two studies. One was a study of journalists working for a variety of media, including the mainstream media. And then the second study was, in fact, a study of alternative media, and specifically of documentaries that we consider as radical documentaries because they were concerned with the crisis and assumed a very different point of view of the mainstream compared to the mainstream media. But in terms of what happened in Greece, and now Greece, there is a set of very specific and particular circumstances when it comes to Greek media, but the main finding was that there are very low levels of trust in the mainstream media, that mainstream media really are not covering the news in an impartial and objective way, and that people are turning away from them.
And
so that was the main finding when it comes to mainstream media in Greece.
When you say that they're not being impartial, are you saying that more or less that there is a narrative written or constructed for them by the powers that be, and that mainstream media then follow this narrative because it's in their interest to do so?
I think it's yes. Well, it's a little bit more complex. It doesn't, you know, it's not. It doesn't work in the same way that, like, you know, your editor is not going to come down to you and tell you what to print or what to broadcast. Rather, it's kind of like you're socialized into this. When you're looking for sources, you're only going to certain people that act as sources. Politicians themselves would, or political officers of parties, they will only speak to you if you present their point of view, as it were. If they find that you're too critical, they may not speak to you at all. So you kind of like have to, you know, water down what you will be reporting on them so as to have access to them as sources for the next time. So it's a whole kind of like host of conditions that operate that make it so that you can't break the mold, as it were. But also, like, really, quite literally speaking, they only portray one version of events. And this version of events is not necessarily the only one, if you know what I mean, especially when it came to the crisis, the financial crisis in Greece. So the narrative that the mainstream media were supporting was that it was primarily the Greek people who were at fault for this crisis. And that was not really what went on.
Yeah, and that seemed to be something actually, and it's a strange thing, Eugenia, and, you know, excuse me, that seemed to be predominantly the message being sent out, even by the Greek media. I mean, I would have expected it, we'll say, from mainstream European media, but even the Greek media were saying, oh, well, it's our own fault because we retired too early, we don't have a proper tax system. You know, they seem to be following a certain, and I use the phrase again, narrative.
Yeah, that is correct. And another thing that it's absolutely correct what you're saying. And another thing that we should know is, like, who owns these mainstream media? And in Greece, it's very clear that the people who own them are really deeply implicated in running Greece the last, like, 30 or 40 years or so. So we're talking about people who are not publishers. That's not their job, but they have, like, their hands in other pies as well, from banks to construction companies. So obviously these are not you know, they're not the same kind of like media owner that we're used to in the years before, like, or even now in Ireland, you have people who are, that's their job. The job is to work and to produce media, and you have people who have outside business interests, and they also have media. So that obviously creates a situation where you feel like you can't really criticize, you know, where government contracts are going, because your boss is actually also involved in these contracts. But also in terms of the foreign media, they would go into Greece and they had a network of collaborators, and this network of collaborators would only take them to a limited range of sources. And then obviously they also narrated the events in ways that that agreed with, you know, the mainstream narrative that Greek people are to blame, and, you know, it's not down to banks, it's not down to the global financial system, and there's only one way out of it, which is to privatize everything, and that's it.
Eugenia, in relation to that, and I presume that the Greek people were probably, the Greek citizens, Greek people, Greek citizens, whichever way you want to describe them, were probably very quick to understand that the mainstream media was portraying them in a certain way. So based on that, where did they turn for their newsfeed? And in future, where are people likely to turn for their newsfeed?
Well, this is a very kind of, like, we have a very kind of ambivalent situation where you turn away from the mainstream media because what they're talking about does not correspond to your own lived experience. So if you turn away from them, where do you turn next? And that created a situation where you have a lot of new media players, new media actors who are not necessarily in the business of producing news, but who are in the business of commenting on news. So that you have, on the one hand, a pluralization of the news media, but on the other hand, you're not 100% sure whether the facts are really like what they're claiming to be, that the figures, if they're presenting figures, that the figures are right, that the quotes they're using are correct, and things that perhaps in the mainstream media you'd have a process whereby there would be at least some fact-checking, there would be some verification, there would be some kind of like formal requirement to check your news sources, whereas in the various blogs, in the various online media, this is not the case. So now specifically in Greece, we have a proliferation of news sources, but that doesn't make them necessarily better sources.
And I would presume, Eugenia, that from your own knowledge and your studies in relation to this, you would see that there are inherent dangers in the spread of, as you say, these new media outlets popping up all over the place, that there are inherent dangers in that as well.
Yes, absolutely, because you have, of course, like in the context of Greece, the emergence of certain, like, really, I would term good media, because they adhere to the professional requirements of producing journalism, and they're independent in the sense that they don't have another agenda. But at the same time, you have like proliferation of blogs that are really very, very extreme, especially in the right-wing sphere, especially associated with the Golden Dawn, which is the Greek extreme-right political party. So they're producing really pernicious kinds of narratives about foreigners, about European elites and so forth, the populist discourse that that has a very negative effect in the whole of the public sphere. So there's no way of addressing this in any decent way, because if you stop them, you're going to stop the others as well. So I don't know, I'm not sure of what kind of regulation we can produce that allows different media actors to emerge, but that controls for this kind of like populist discourse, and that's very, very challenging.
Yeah, because I mean, it we have seen a time out a number, and in my introduction I referred to President Trump. And I mean, we do now see across the world that if any media outlet, for argument's sake, attacks anybody in power, well, we have the new buzzword now, fake news.
Exactly. Exactly, and this is another very kind of ambiguous and ambivalent term, because on the one hand you see that there are a lot of people who are dissatisfied with the mainstream media for reasons I explained, that they do not really correspond to your experiences. But on the other hand, even these kinds of media would have gone through a process of verification that at least ensures that they're not printing lies or outright lies. They spin facts, perhaps, but they wouldn't be printing the outright kind of lies that you come across sometimes in the right-wing blogosphere and the conspiracy theory sites. So, but we've seen how people like Donald Trump, for example, have weaponized this kind of like accusation of fake news, and they spring it, like, you know, they throw it against anyone who's criticizing them. And that, again, has like very negative effects on the public sphere, because it creates this kind of like idea of cynicism that, you know, everyone has an agenda, everyone might be telling lies, there is no truth as such, and that is eroding social trust at all levels.
Now, Eugenia, that brings us very neatly to another part of the findings, that we will describe them again as mainstream media, are facing historical lows in trust and credibility. Is there anything in the studies you've carried out and the research that you have carried out which would point the way for, and I'm putting them all under the one umbrella of mainstream media, to get back their trust and get back credibility?
Yes, absolutely. I think that we've followed the successes of some of the new alternative media that emerged in Greece, and there are two factors that contributed to re-establishing a kind of like a relationship of trust between media and readers, between journalists and readers. One of those was the funding source. So one of the new print media that emerged in Greece is a cooperative media. So they don't get money. There isn't, like, you know, there's not a single owner. But in fact, this is a group of journalists who lost their jobs because the title they were working for went bankrupt. So they became jobless, they became unemployed, and they got together, they put each, I think it was €1,000, and that included everyone from, like, you know, people who worked in the printing side and to, like, managers. So they, all of them got together, put about, like, €1,000 each, they formed a capital, and then they started printing, and now they divide the profits of the newspaper among themselves. So that kind of like model of ownership worked really well, because they advertised it. They said, this is what we're doing. We don't have another agenda. No one is funding us. We are not going to be accepting advertisements from people that we're criticizing. And we rely only on income from our, you know, from the people, from our readers. So that really started establishing a relationship of trust. And then the second aspect that was really important was that they started describing things as people told them. So instead of going to politicians to get comment, they would go to people, like to society, to social sources, to people like in the streets to get their views. And that's how they started a new kind of like agenda, if I might use the term, that looked towards society rather than political sources to describe everyday life. And I think this is very important, because that's where gaps occur. So they, if the mainstream media get only one view, and this view tend to be the one that comes from, you know, the people who rule the country, then obviously you're discounting other kinds of experiences, and you're not giving the whole picture, and people are not going to be trusting you if you don't, if what they read is not what they live in their everyday reality.
Yeah, it seems that one thing that your findings have come up with, Eugenia, if I may say so, is that there is an unhealthy alliance between media moguls and politicians, that is a wholly unhealthy alliance, and that is not just confined to Greece.
Yes, that is correct. We were also involved in a study that covered 11 European countries, and that was a very clear finding, because the advertising, because advertising the media, especially news media, was one of the main sources of income. Now the internet has shifted all advertising to digital. But the same kind of like money that circulated, the majority of it now goes to Google and Facebook. So there's less money to go around. So people who were making money just out of newspapers are not making money anymore. And that has meant that they sought to like sell the media to others. But those people who moved into the media industry would not necessarily use the media for profit. They would use it for political purposes. We've seen that in Greece. We've seen it in the whole of like Southern Europe, and it's increasingly becoming the case in Central and Western Europe as well. Because you cannot make money out of printing the news anymore, then you see other players who are not the pure players, they're not purely publishers, moving in, and these people have other agendas, and their main agenda being that of political influence. So that's the financial side of the media that is creating really a very difficult situation. But this is shaping also a lot of other relationships. Like, for example, a lot of journalists will not be working full-time for media now, but they will be freelancers. So if you get paid by what you publish, then you have to make sure that what you publish is going to be published. So therefore, you develop a kind of like very bland approach, and an approach that is not going to create any issues when it gets published.
Yeah, keep the upper echelons sweet at all costs. Eugenia, you know, from a professional point of view, you would be media literate. I would be supposed to be media literate because it's our job. But a lot, and I would suggest a lot of people out there wouldn't even know what media literacy is. That brings an inherent danger as well, because, you know, we grew up in a society where, well, if the man wearing a suit reading the 6 o'clock news told you something, then it had to be the truth. But that's no longer the case.
Yes, it is correct, and it is. I would definitely see that there is a point in developing media literacy skills, and to do it as early as possible. For example, to pupils of secondary education level, so that they know how to look for what is credible and what is credible beyond the source. So the source would be the where it comes from would be a way of finding out how credible a piece of information is. But now we have to develop ways that look in the construction of the argument and judge for ourselves whether it is correct or not. Who is used as a source? Who is countering this argument? These kinds of elements. And we do it to we teach this kind of stuff to students as well. And I have to say that most of them have like really very sharp critical abilities. But I don't know what happens after this stage that that leads people to share news that is like really very low in credibility, and a lot of it is outright fake as well. But certainly there is scope to develop this side of things, the media literacy side of things, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people, and I don't want to pick out one platform above another, but time out of number, and I have heard it, and I treat it with severe scepticism any time I hear it mentioned, you will hear people say, "Oh, I read this on Facebook," and you know, and I don't. That is no credible source of news.
Yes, exactly. Well, they are trying to figure out a way, an algorithmic way, like some kind of like automated means of getting people to recognize what is credible and what is not credible, but it hasn't worked so far. But within Facebook, you have mainstream media publishing on Facebook as well. So, you know, I could be using RTE as my source, but the Facebook page of RTE, for example, or the Facebook page of the Irish Times, or it could be, I don't know, some blog that no one has heard of before that produced an article that I happen to agree with, so therefore I consider it credible enough and put it on my timeline, but it turns out that it's totally fake. So it's not Facebook as such, and Facebook has denounced responsibility for being a publisher. So they said, like, we're not a publisher, and we can't be held accountable as publishers. But on the other hand, they have to be held accountable in terms of the kind of information they allow to circulate on their platform. But given the volume, it's extremely difficult to do this without finding an automated way of doing it.
Yeah, and of course we spoke earlier on, Eugenia, about the unhealthy alliance between media moguls and politicians. But that is a two-way street, because, I mean, it suits politicians as well if it's their narrative that's being spun in the media.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think that that they would be mobilized to change the situation. It's very difficult to change the situation from the top down anyway. I don't think it's possible, because a lot of these pressures are created by external factors. Like I said, for example, the advertising industry has shifted towards digital, and that is creating the main source of problems for the business model of traditional print media. But on the other hand, you see that a lot of politicians are not really happy with it, with a lot of the things that go on in mainstream media as well. So I can understand the mainstream media now feeling that they're getting it from all sides. And in fact, because they're journalists themselves who are trying their best, and they fall under a lot of, like, very negative criticism, and that is creating a lot of, you know, very negative environment for them to work, that is bound to create even to have an even more negative impact on the way in which they produce the news. So it's true that mainstream politicians may not want necessarily to change, but if you remember, for example, was it a few months ago when the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar himself made a comment, a disparaging comment on journalists and the news in Ireland, and he was held accountable for it, and rightly so, I believe. So, yes, I don't know, it's a very complex situation.
Yes, indeed. And, Eugenia, for people who would like to drill down more into your findings and the research you're doing, because the document you produced, it's absolutely fabulous. I was lucky enough to get my hands on it the other day and go through it. Like, it is, it really does open your eyes in relation to what's going on and what people should be wary of when absorbing news. If, for anybody who wants to get a hold of it, where can they do it?
Most of the papers I publish, I put them online. You can either find them through the DCU site, because we have an online repository for our work, or through academia.edu. If people Google my name, they should be able to find them.
Excellent. And we will give details of that at the end of the program. Eugenia, it's been fascinating, because I think that the work you've done, people should really be grateful to you for it, because it is very timely in the society that we live in now, because irrespective of where you go for your news, just make sure, as you said, that it's verifiable, and just stop for a second and think, is there a hidden agenda here? Would that be the advice?
Exactly, absolutely. And also, does this correspond to what you know about the situation, to what you've heard before, or does it depart very drastically? So there has to be some kind of, like, connection to what you know already. So that's another thing to factor in.
Yeah, as you call it, life experiences and lived experiences.
Exactly.
When they differ from what you're reading, the antenna should be going up straight away, Eugenia, yeah?
Exactly. And let me use an example when it comes to that. So when you see all these, like, two-page spreads on mainstream media about how to decorate your house that costs $1 million or whatever, and then in your lived experience you have issues paying the rent, so then obviously then you have to start thinking of what is the agenda behind these kinds of, like, advertisements for, you know, a home refurbishment, for buying a new house, for mortgages, for this and that. So that's how I mean, does this correspond to your lived experience or not? So that's the kind of, like, critical skill that we have to develop.
Eugenia, it's an amazing thing, you know. They call it common sense, and it's not that common at all. Eugenia Cipria, I presume I mangled your surname, I normally do, from Dublin City University, our neighbours just up the road. Eugenia, it has been enlightening talking to you this morning. Thank you so much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.